Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. Well, actually, we're going to start by talking with Nation Chang, who's headed to West Point. And we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Nelson Chang. He's a guy who got interested, and we're going to hear his story. Glad you could join us, Nathan. Thanks for being aboard.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell us how and why you got interested in West Point. Was it family members or movies or friends, or how did it happen?
To start, I've always wanted to be an engineer for as long as I can remember. My dad's an engineer. Both of my grandpas were engineers and my uncle's an engineer. But I always found myself struggling with purpose and meaning because I decided that I want to feel like I'm helping people and I want to make a difference. And I think that the Army and West Point is the best place to do that. A relevant example right now is the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. And obviously it collapsed, but it's the Army Corps of Engineers that are fixing that up. They're removing the debris from the waterway to get the trade back going up, and then they're going to be working on the new bridge shortly. So I think that's a good example of how I could be directly and positively affecting people's lives. And to me, helping people in the Army Corps of Engineers is more meaningful than working for a company whose sole purpose is to make money.
That makes sense to me. When I was a cadet, everyone had to be an engineering major. I wanted to be one, but the concept then was that engineering training makes you be analytic in your thinking and your analysis, which you need to be everywhere. So obviously, we also sent people to the Corps of Engineers. Well, that makes good sense, what you're talking about. Talk to us about your time in high school. Were you doing well academic? Were you playing any sports? Any or things outside of school? What was your activities? I guess you're wrapping them up now, right?
Yep. Academically, I've always done really well. I have all A's except 1B in an advanced placement class right now. So academically, I've always been pretty squared away. And in terms of extracurricular activities, my biggest thing was I'm an active member in the band. I was a 4-year marcher in our marching band, and I was the drum major for 2 years, played in the jazz band for all 4 years, and also a pit orchestra. And I am also an active volunteer with the National Honor Society. And then outside of school, I perform with the Detroit Metropolitan Youth Symphony Orchestra and also the University of Michigan Youth Trombone Ensemble. And then finally, I also do have a job at my church.
Wow. Well, you and I are different because I have zero musical skills. So I guess there's a kind of balance in nature that all that I didn't get, you must have gotten. So that's cool. You're used to being active. You're used to being part of teams. You have talent that you've developed. And you're apparently a better student than I was too, but that's what we got to do. So how did you hear about West Point? What attracted you there as opposed to somewhere else?
I heard about West Point from one of my dad's coworkers who was actually an alum from, I guess, a while ago, I think early 2000s. And he was talking to me about it. He works at General Motors, which is where my dad works. So that's kind of how I got introduced to it. And what drew me to it, I mean, I could highlight the excellent opportunities you have there and the excellent professors and, you know, the degree shows a lot in terms of prestige. But for me, it's really about having a job that feels like I can be helping people, whether it's, you know, Francis Scott Key Bridge or Panama Canal or, you know, helping develop infrastructure in undeveloped countries. That's all what the Army Corps of Engineers does, and I think that's what I want to do.
Makes sense. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Nation Chang. So how did you contact West Point? How did you make contact with them? And what has that contact been like?
So all my contact has mostly been through the portal, candidate.westpoint.edu. And I first applied when I was applying for the Summer Leaders Experience last year. So that got my foot in the door and I got accepted to the SLE. So I went there and then that's where I passed my fitness assessment after the SLE. It opened up a lot of doors for inputting academics and letters of recommendation. And that's kind of how my application went. And in terms of who I was talking to or who I had contact with, it was mostly my dad's friend, who is actually a field force representative for a neighboring congressional district. So he was able to help me with the process because he was familiar with the process and all the different things that had to be done.
Okay, so that was your entree to get in touch with the congressional people who have to do formally do the appointment. Is that right?
For the congressional members, that was actually an application on their website. So you have to apply for all of those individually. So I applied for a nomination from Representative Alyssa Slatkin and also Senator Gary Peters.
Okay, that makes sense. You right now, you're not even yet a cadet, but you will be in a couple of months. Are you considering making the Army a career, or have you thought about that for sure?
Yes, I have thought about it. I'm not entirely sure what I want to do yet, but I am open to the possibility. I don't know. When I have to make that decision, it'll be 9 years in the future. And I'm not sure what my situation will be like then. And I'm sure a lot can change. But as of right now, I'm open to any possibility.
Okay. If you were to picture yourself 5 years from now, what do you picture yourself being? I'm guessing a second lieutenant in the Corps of Engineers. Am I close?
Yeah. 5 years, I'll be just out of West Point, about a year. Hopefully in the Corps of Engineers. I've not yet decided where I'd want to go in the Corps of Engineers. I still have time to figure that out. But I think over my 4 years at West Point, I'll get a better idea of what exactly I want to focus in on, because the Corps of Engineers is a broad group. So there's many different things I could try to tackle. So I'll be choosing what I want to do, and then West Point will equip me for whatever challenges come my way.
I agree with you. What are you doing now to prepare yourself to be when you report to West Point, which I presume is in early July, right?
Yep. July 1st is our day. So for preparing, for me, it's mostly been physical. I started off my getting ready for West Point as pretty skinny. So leading up to the fitness assessment, I was doing a lot of working out, and even past that, I'm still doing a lot of working out. I'm going to the gym and making sure I can keep my push-ups and pull-ups. I can keep those numbers up, and also running. So yeah, and I bought a rucksack. So I've been rucking around with 60 pounds of weight preparing for the march back, because I think that'll be pretty difficult. But mostly physical stuff, and I've also been staying on top of my academics to make sure I'm mentally sharp.
We're out of time, but do you have one quick advice to students out there who are considering going to the Service Academy?
Yes. I would just say get everything in early. The earlier you get it in, the earlier they can review it, the earlier you can get accepted. And a lot of the things take a lot of time. Medical took a lot of time, and just anything in the medical area takes a lot of time. So just get it in early. And the other thing I'd say, the last thing I'll say is, if you're not sure if you want to go yet, I would recommend that you do what it takes to get in, so that you can leave that door open if you later decide that you want to get in. Because being ready to go and not actually going is better than wanting to go and not being able to go.
Well said. Here's my final challenge to you. Can you say beat Navy with passion?
I can try. Beat Navy!
Amen, brother. I will see you at the Army-Navy game again, Nathan. That's where we'll see each other next, because I just bought my tickets. Thank you,
All right,
brother.
I'll see you later. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us today. Thank you for your desire to serve our nation. I'll see you at the game.
All right. See you. Have a great day.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. This while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Veterans swore an oath to defend this country, and that oath doesn't expire when we take off the uniform.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and military families the opportunity to continue serving their country by taking on the most important issues our country is facing.
A better foreign policy, quality health care for veterans, responsible spending, and more.
Learn more about how you can play a part by visiting CVAFrontlines.com. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. I'm happy to welcome to the show veteran Ron Allen. Ron served in combat, was wounded, is now, among other things, in leadership with the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Welcome, Ron. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
Ron, start by telling us about your time in the military. When and why did you join? What was your specialty?
Well, the reason why I joined the Marines were my father was a Marine, and he island hopped, and he got wounded on Guadalcanal, so he kind of talked to me, and not really talked me into it, but I guess follow family tradition, joined the Marines. So I joined the Marines in 1967, and I was in Vietnam January 68. And during the Tet Offensive 1968, I was wounded in Way City, Imperial Way City, during the Tet Offensive. And I recovered from my wounds, and I was progressing, did my whole tour, what we called 13 months, was actually 12 months and 20 days. So it's 13 months, we call it. But then I had different jobs. I was a grunt. I carried a radio. I went down in the tunnels. And I came, I got out, honorable discharge. And the ironic part about it all is that after I got out, I was coming back from the store or something, and I had a list of places, Purple Heart Combat Wounded Veteran. And all of I know, all of a sudden, I got this guy knocking on my window. And he told me who he was. He showed his ID card. So I took the application and filled it out, and I've been a member ever since.
That makes sense. You know, we should have run into each other in Vietnam. I was fighting on the outside of the walls of Hue in January of 68.
Oh, yeah?
In February. So we should have hung out then, but I guess we, there was that wall between us. You were inside the walled city, and I was outside it.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Like that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen next.
You don't.
So we came that close. We met again. This month. Wow. Okay. This is crazy. That's life. So you got out of the military. What did you do then?
Well, then I got my job. I worked at GM for 34 years, and then I got married. I've been married to my wife, Debbie, for it'll be 52 years in September. And we've been together 57 years, but 2 years of high school and 3 years when I was in the Marines, and then 52 years of marriage. We have one son.
Hey, we're a lot alike there.
We do.
My wife and I will hit 58 years this year. We have one son. And I say that I met her, we got engaged, I went to Vietnam, came back, we got married. A year later, I was back in Vietnam. I say that one of the reasons our marriage is doing so well is that I was gone two of the first 3 years we were a couple. So I couldn't mess things up.
There you go.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Ron Allen. Ron, you're with the Military of the Purple Heart.
Yes, I'm the state commander.
Yeah, for the state of Michigan. Tell us about MOPH, Military Order of the Purple Heart. What do they do? Who do they do it for? How do they do it?
Well, we first would recruit members in because there's only two elite groups in the military armed forces. One is the recipients of the Congressional Medal of Honor, and the other one is the recipients of the Purple Heart Medal of Merit. We help veterans who have been wounded in combat, help them get into service officers, get into the VA, get their service, get their treatment, and what they need. And then we help the families of those who of veterans paid the ultimate price for their life. And we support them. We have what we call a family pin that I presented to them. And this means a lot to the families that they're not forgotten. And we work hard to get all of our combat wounded veterans in our organization. But on the other hand, the veterans coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, and what have you, they don't seem to want to join right away. You can't push them. If you do, you're going to lose them. But somewhere along the line, right now, I've noticed we had an influx of new younger members coming in. And that's what our organizations need. They are our lifeline for our organization. And I, like I said, I'm a state commander. I'm also a commander of my chapter, Downriver Wyandotte 127. And we are recruiting every time we turn around. And this is what we do. You ask people, do you know anything about the Purple Heart? Yeah. Aren't you the guys to pick up the furniture and the clothes? Yes, we are. But we pass them out. We give them out to veterans who need it and their families and that. So this is what we do. I mean, in Iowa, Michigan, a couple months ago, we made up 75 to 100 backpacks with gloves, hats, goodies in it. We passed them out to all the veterans, homeless veterans and everything. Everything we do is for our veterans. And this is our main objective, to take care of our veterans. And them being homeless veterans, that's really a slap in our face because we haven't taken care of them. And now it's something that we are working very, very hard to do.
Okay. You reach out to wounded veterans who receive the Purple Heart. You take care of them. I presume you also care for their families.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Can family members get involved?
Yes, they do. In fact, the 20th of April, they have what they call a Gold Star Mothers fundraiser banquet, in which they raise money for their organization. These are for all the women who have lost a loved one in combat.
That's what Gold Star families are.
Gold Star family members. Yes, sir. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. So you're basically members of you have received a Purple Heart or family members, but you work with other veterans organizations. You're basically part of the team of veterans helping veterans. Am I reading this right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm also the commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars for Private James E. Donovan / Romulus VW478 in Romulus, Michigan. We have a clothing drive. We have toys for tots. Every time we have a function, that's the price of admission. Bring something we can, clothing or canned goods or something, anything that we can give to our veterans in need of.
That sounds like a very worthy organization. One of the things that I find interesting, and I have two Purple Hearts, so I know a little bit of what I'm talking about. The Purple Heart was created by and has George Washington's picture on it, and was originally designed as an award for good performance.
Right.
And at some point, they stopped doing that, and then they restarted it as an award for wounded veterans.
Yes, sir. I got the history on that. George Washington in 1762, actually the first Purple Heart was not a medal. It was a piece of cloth, purple cloth, trimmed in white. And then thanks to General Douglas MacArthur in 1932, he took it to Congress and he presented it to him, and something crazy happened. Everybody got on the same page and approved the medal. The medal that he presented is the same medal that's in existence to this very day.
And so therefore, we've got a lot of history there too, but all of it is veterans, military people, active and veterans, taking care of our country and taking care of veterans. And that's what we're about, right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. I think we've hit the nail pretty well. If there are listeners who'd like to know more or get involved or get plugged in somehow, I'll bet you'll even accept donations because I'm sure it takes money to do what you do. How
exactly
can they plug in, get involved, wherever they live in the United States?
I have the national website right here. It's called purpleheart.org.
So if they go to purpleheart.org, they should be able to click into the state they live in?
The state that they live in, or nationally, you go right to the website and it'll say information, a membership. All you got to do is follow the headings on there and it'll just click right into it and it'll give you all the information you need.
And by the same token, I would presume you could go to almost every community has a military or the Purple Heart post. Just walk in, right?
And that's it. A lot of veterans walked in. How ironic it is, I was sitting there at the VFW. A guy walked in, introduced him. We got him as a member. And I said, are you a Purple Heart recipient? He said, yes, I am. I said, well, you're going to join a Purple Heart. And we got him in there. And his name is Frank. And he's helping ecstatic because he's one of our go-getters. And this is what we take to keep the ball rolling and keep our membership strong.
Well said. Ron, thank you. Thank you for sharing this important information today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform, and especially what you're doing now. I appreciate you and glad we're brothers.
Thank you very much, my brother. And to all my brothers and sisters out there, welcome home.
Amen. Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you are giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin and Bullion. That's where I go. check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. And now it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, bro. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. Always good to be with you.
Chris, give us a quick summary of your time in Mother Army.
Okay. I graduated from West Point like you did just a few years later.
You young kids.
Yeah, at Branched Aviation, and did all the normal aviation stuff that a young officer is supposed to do. Platoon leader, company commander, battalion staff, and then I got a battalion, and lo and behold, I got to take it to Iraq during the surge, which was a very interesting, fulfilling kind of assignment, actually, which led to some other opportunities, and commanded a brigade and sent units to Iraq and Afghanistan for years. And then I was the chief of staff of the Colorado Army Guard for a while. And then I was going to retire, and they offered me a star. So I took it and went to Bosnia to command the NATO headquarters there. Fascinating story someday if you want to hear about it. And then I went to the Pentagon and learned how the Army thinks and makes decisions. And then I went to a command at NORTHCOM and finished out, because I wasn't going to live in D.C. for too many years. But that was my next assignment. So I had a great go, a great run, and no regrets. It was very fulfilling.
Okay, what's our Battle of the Month this month?
Today, we're going to talk about an American icon. This is something every American has to know. This is Lexington Concord, April 19th, 1775. You ever heard of it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so as most of our battles, there's always relevance and good knowledge, but this one, every American should know this one. So, this is a cast of characters, Lieutenant Colonel Francis Smith on the British side. He works for General Thomas Gage, who's the overall British commander in America, versus Captain John Parker of the Massachusetts Militia and Colonel James Barrett of the Massachusetts Militia. So that's our cast of characters. Now, I always start with why we should know this battle. This one's kind of obvious. The famous shot heard round the world, immortalized by Emerson in a famous poem. But this was the real military start of the American Revolution. That's number one. Number two, this is just big time American cultural heritage. I mean, this is Paul Revere plays in this one. Dr. Joseph Warren, Captain Parker. You know, these are icons. And you got John Hancock and Sam Adams, who are hiding in Lexington, you know, getting away from Boston, where they are going to be arrested during this whole saga. And finally, I think it's a good lesson on the American militia. You know, it reinforced the value of the militia, which was kind of a double-edged sword, which hopefully I can mention at the end. But it really reinforced the myth, almost the mythical status of the militia in America. So that's why I think we should know this battle.
Chris, you hit some key points that one I knew and agreed on, and you brought a couple more that I thought I knew and didn't know, or I thought I knew everything and didn't know about. So yeah, let's go on.
Okay. So the summary. So as all of your listeners know, revolutionary tensions had been building for years. A lot of people bring it back to the Stamp Act in 1765, where Britain's trying to recoup all their expenditures from the French and Indian Wars. But really, after the Boston Tea Party in December of 1773, King George III really puts the screws to the colonies, especially Massachusetts. In fact, it's so bad that he says, okay, I'm going to dissolve the Massachusetts government. I'm going to close the port of Boston. I'm going to create a large garrison, and I'm going to establish military rule. So, I mean, he puts the screws to Massachusetts. So tensions are high. And Massachusetts was declared in rebellion. And Lieutenant General Sir Thomas Gage finds himself in a very tough spot, because the towns and villages are now reinvigorating the militias, doing real training and getting rid of the loyalists. They're stockpiling weapons and ammunition. And London, meanwhile, is calling for Gage to take harsh action on the colonies. So in late March, Gage learns of a large cache of weapons stored in Concord, you know, which is just west of Boston by several miles. He puts together a secret task force of 700 elite infantry and grenadiers. They're going to march under the cover of darkness and seize these armaments in Concord before the militias can react. It's all supposed to happen before dawn. Meanwhile, the Patriots had set up a shadow government, which, of course, good American ingenuity. Dr. Joseph Warren is the de facto leader. Paul Revere is a really active intelligence gatherer at this point, and he soon uncovers Gage's plan. So Warren coordinates with Revere for the advanced signaling, which is famous to everyone, one if by land and two if by sea, land being moving over the Boston Neck, and sea being we're going to move across the bay to Cambridge on boats. So on the night of the 18th, this is 18 April, the British begin to move. Now, I can't do all the details, so I'll make it quick. The British move was compromised from the beginning, a great intelligence network across the colonies. Church bells were going off as the Brits were landing in Cambridge, and muskets were firing as signals passed, you know, throughout the dark night that the British were coming. So it's already bogged down and slow. They spend 3 hours offloading supplies and cross-loading stuff to the soldiers, and they get going. But Captain Parker now is standing in Lexington with 77 militiamen because the word is out. So as the two sides line up, the Brits line up against them. The famous shot heard around the world rings out. It's a quick volley of fire. The militia withdrew. I mean, they're totally outgunned and overmatched by these British professionals. 8 militiamen dead, 10 wounded. So the revolution has started right here in Lexington. So the word spreads. It goes out to Concord, horse riders, Revere. Now, as the column advances toward Concord, preparations were also being made. Colonel Barrett now is in charge of the militia. He assembles about 400 men by the end. They're hiding the final cannon shot, powder balls, in all kinds of creative places. The British arrive around 7 o'clock in the morning, way after they planned. The British commander, Lieutenant Colonel Francis Smith, divides his force. He sends a portion of it into Concord, the town, and he sends a portion towards the North Bridge to kind of watch over what he thinks are the factious, rebellious people up on the hill. Now, Barrett's soldiers see some fires in the town. They see smoke, and they're like, oh, my God, the Brits are burning the town. So they're like, okay, we're going to move off this hill. We're going to go across that bridge, and we're going to march into town and help our townsmen. Well, this creates a confrontation at the famous North Bridge. So the Brits are lined up to oppose them. The militia comes down to the bridge. The nervous British soldiers start firing, and the militia returns fire very effectively, killing 3, wounding 8. And the Brits withdrew, and they regroup, and they start moving back to Boston. And this is where the real challenge begins, this nightmare retrograde operation for the Brits. The famous, I think it's called Patriot Road or Victory Road now. So the militia now are converging everywhere along this road. It ends up being 2,000 to 3,000 militia by the end of the day. There's a great backstory of the communication network that was set up years before called the Committee of Correspondence, with quick riders dispatching messages all through the towns and countryside. And so it was very effective. So soon, I mean, it was a running battle all the way back to basically Bunker Hill. And just when it looked like all was lost for the British, Brigadier General Hugh Percy, his relief column arrives and kind of saves the day for the Brits. I mean, they would have been wiped out or taken prisoner. And it's just enough to help them limp back to Bunker Hill, which, by the way, is a different route. Percy was smart enough to take a shorter route to get under the cover of naval gunfire. But the nightmare ends after sunset, after 250 casualties for the Brits. The Colonials suffer about 88. And then this Lexington alarm, as it would come to be known, spreads across the colonies like wildfire. And it's the revolution is on. The revolution has begun.
That is one of the most important, most knowledgeable battles we've ever had in our history.
And there's so many good backstories in this one. And just a great, iconic American battle.
Well, thank you, Chris, for taking that time to share that cool information. We're about out of time. Give us the website there.
All right. Website is battledigest.com. If you like history, if you like military history, which is kind of history really in a nutshell, then you really should check out battledigest.com. I try to make it succinct yet comprehensive. So these are like executive summaries of battles with lessons in them. So check it out, battledigest.com.
I agree. Thank you, Chris, for your great review and for your being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. God bless you, bro.
Thanks. You too, Danny. Always a pleasure.
I'm Colonel Danny Gill. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's time for military history. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Navy Mom Suzanne is very concerned about all the illegals coming across our southern border. How can we stay safe with all these illegals around? And how can we afford to feed and house them?
Suzanne, you asked the questions that every American needs to be asking their Congress critters and U.S. senators. I believe we're going broke supporting these people, and we're very much at risk as crime goes way up and the potential for terrorism increases.
And Bill, a dad who has two children who are interested in going to a service academy, is worried about the culture at these schools. Are they really as woke as your guests suggested?
Bill, while the academies are good schools academically, they are very, very woke. If your kids do go there, get them prepared to ignore the nonsense. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 24 April 1863, during our Civil War, the Union Army issued a code of conduct for federal soldiers and officers when dealing with Confederate prisoners and civilians. The code was borrowed by many European nations, and its influence can be seen on the Geneva Convention. This was the brainchild of Francis Lieber, a Prussian immigrant whose three sons served in the Civil War. Lieber was a scholar of international law who took a keen interest in the treatment of combatants and civilians. He advised General Henry Halleck, General-in-Chief of the Union Armies, on how to treat guerrilla fighters captured by federal forces. The final rules of combat document consisted of 157 articles written almost entirely by Lieber. They established policies for the treatment of prisoners, exchanges, and flags of truce. There was no document like it in the world at the time, and other countries soon adopted it. It became the standard for international military law.
On 26 April 1865, Confederate General Joseph Johnson surrendered his army to General William Sherman in North Carolina. After the surrender of General Robert E. Lee's force on April 9th, Johnson's army was the last hope of the Confederacy.
And on 22 April 1915, during World War I, the Germans attacked with the usual artillery bombardment. When the shelling died down, the Allies waited for the German attack troops, but instead were thrown into panic when chlorine gas wafted across no man's land and into their trenches. The Germans targeted 4 miles of the front with the wind-blown poison gas and decimated 2 divisions of French troops. The Allied line was breached, but the Germans, perhaps as shocked as the Allies by the devastating effects of the poison gas, failed to take full advantage, and the Allies held most of their positions.
Wow. And on the 25th of April, 1945, 8 Russian armies completely encircled Berlin, linking up with the U.S. First Army. Germany was, for practical purposes, Allied territory. Among the Soviet commanders present was Marshal Georgi Zhukov. Zhukov demanded and received the unconditional surrender of Berlin from German General Krebs less than a week later.
And on 24 April, 1967, during the Vietnam War, General William Westmoreland, U.S. commander in South Vietnam, caused controversy by saying that the enemy had gained support in the U.S. that gives him hope that he can win politically that which he cannot win militarily. Although he said that, quote, 95% of the people were behind the United States effort in Vietnam, he asserted that the American soldiers in Vietnam were dismayed, and so am I, by recent unpatriotic acts at home, unquote. This criticism of the anti-war movement was not received well by many in and out of the anti-war movement, who believed it was both their right and responsibility to speak out against the war. Colonel, yeah, what about his right to speak out?
Well, and the media totally supported the communists. American forces never lost a major battle in Vietnam, but the media convinced our people to turn against our military. That's how it ended, as my perspective. On 23 April 1975, President Gerald Ford said the Vietnam War was finished as far as America was concerned. Quote, today Americans can regain the sense of pride that existed before Vietnam. It cannot be achieved by refighting a war, end quote. This was devastating news to the South Vietnamese, who were desperately pleading for our support as North Vietnamese surrounded Saigon for the final assault on their capital. The North Vietnamese had launched a major offensive in March to capture the provincial capital of Ba My Thuot in the Central Highlands. The South Vietnamese defenders there fought poorly and were quickly overwhelmed. Despite previous promises by both presidents, Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, to provide support, our Congress did not approve any support. The North Vietnamese continued to attack south along the coast, defeating the South Vietnamese forces at each encounter. By April 27, the North Vietnamese had completely encircled Saigon. By the morning of April 30th, it was all over. The South Vietnamese surrendered, and the Vietnam War was officially over.
And on April 24, 1980, an ill-fated military operation to rescue the 52 American hostages held in Tehran ended with 8 U.S. servicemen dead and no hostages rescued. With the Iran hostage crisis stretching into its 6th month and all diplomatic appeals to the Iranian government ending in failure, President Jimmy Carter ordered the military mission as a last-ditch attempt to save the hostages. During the operation, 3 of 8 helicopters failed, crippling the crucial airborne plans. The mission was then canceled at the staging area in Iran, but during the withdrawal, one of the retreating helicopters collided with one of 6 C-130 aircraft, killing 8 soldiers and injuring 5. The next day, a somber President Carter took full responsibility for the tragedy. The hostages were not released for another 270 days.
I was the Mideast war planner of a command that should have tried that rescue. We weren't even consulted, but that's life. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Lumberton, Texas man was entering a pizza shop when an angry customer threw his pizza at the man. When the man asked him what he was doing, the assailant drew a 9mm pistol and pointed it at him. The man's son was also in the parking lot and saw his father being threatened, so he drew his own gun and fired on the pizza-throwing assailant, hitting him fatally in the head. Investigators determined the son acted in self-defense.
Thanks, Colonel. Wow, just when you thought it was safe to order a pizza, you read an article like that, and I'm suddenly no longer hungry. That's a strange story, but it highlights how crazy the world is getting these days and the importance of being trained and armed and ready at a moment's notice to fight for your very life. Let's go ahead and break this story down. First, the father did absolutely nothing wrong. All he wanted was a pizza for himself and his son. It's commendable that he didn't lash out at the man after being drenched in pizza. Many people would have launched into a profanity-laced tirade, but this father simply asked why. Second, let's talk about the adult son and his actions. First and foremost, he didn't have his face in his cell phone, and he saw the danger to his father unfold. Parking lots are dangerous places, and he was already at a heightened state of awareness. All of us should be in condition yellow while we're in parking lots, because that's where criminals spend a lot of time. Just as important was the son's willingness to carry a gun. I carry mine 24/7, and so should you. But at the very least, carry a legal firearm every time you venture out into the public arena. And finally, let's talk about that awesome shot. Headshots are incredibly effective, but also very difficult to achieve, especially under stress and in public places. Statistics show that 3 out of 4 headshots result in immediate incapacitation. So if you have the opportunity to, then give it a go. Just be sure you have the requisite amount of skill to make the shot. Aim for the center of the face from the front or from the ear hole on the side shot, and don't miss. This episode ended about as well as it could have, considering the crazy nature of the attacker, and Frontlines of Freedom salutes this father and son for their excellent performance under extreme duress. We wish them all the best as they heal from this trauma and continue to protect and defend the ones they love. Oh, just one more thing. Dad, it's time you got a gun of your own, because your son may not always be with you.
Good point. Our movie of the month is Forever Tonight. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Dr. Zudi Jasser, a U.S. Navy veteran, will discuss his concern for our nation. Then Joe DiBeto will share about the annual Armed Forces Thanksgiving event held in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And Army vet Paul Mayhew will discuss his military service and service after his time in uniform. And then Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else. On the Frontlines of Freedom, dismissed.